15, Side A, Senate Revenue Committee Agenda, January 29, 1981, 1:30 p.m. Orientation, School Finance, Ron Chastain, Economist, Legislative Revenue Office. If time permits, HARP Tax Relief, Jim Scherzinger, Economist, Legislative Revenue Office.
We're continuing our efforts to refresh memories of the school finance formulas system, and Dr. Chastain can teach us.
Well, refresh your memories anyway. I'm finding there are people that know a lot more about these tax areas than I do, these committees. But anyway, first I want to answer a couple of questions that you had yesterday. I did check to make sure that absences didn't penalize any districts, and indeed they do not.
That changed? Or
no, not in the recent.
It has always been
the last 20 years or more. They've always counted absences as well as students present.
Probably the importance then of recording the absence was the fact that that counted instead of not counting. And that's why roll is so important in the schools. It's so that you actually have a document showing, indicating that those people are supposed to be there. Senator Trump?
New terminology that the superintendent uses about dropouts is students who take leave or leave anyway. The leavers. When do the leavers have an effect upon the amount of basic school support? As soon as somebody is automatically left or dropped out, then it's reduced or what?
I'm not sure. I can. I'll pursue that one too. We'll find out just at what point.
That takes as long
very
as
they're scientific about.
Probably not.
Yeah. As long as you're
your school superintendent of 200 kids, I think you would.
Senator Monroe, you had a question? Okay, let's go.
Okay, yesterday.
I have another Farley. Question prior to that. It has to do with what we talked about yesterday. Where does the state land board, how much money do they put? Remember those other funds that we
talked
about?
Federal forest fees and the common school fund.
ONC.
Yeah, ONC, and we said ONC is not part of the...
It's not part of it. It's the state land board.
Yes, don't they? I think they oversee the state lands, and I think it's revenues from the state lands that goes into this common school fund. It's called a common irreducible school fund.
Okay.
The money goes in, and just the interest is given back to the schools.
Okay. You're right.
Okay. We can give you an idea of the relative magnitude of those. Common school fund receipts were about $6.5 million total for the state for this current year. The federal forest fees were about $30 million.
Is the state land board the only thing that goes into this common school fund?
No, I'm not sure about that.
$6.5 million worth of interest was distributed.
Yes.
And $30 million in federal forest receipts?
Yes.
And how much in state forest receipts? Do you have
it's in the ballpark. Is it about $35 million that was going out to the severance tax receipts?
No. Well, okay. Let's not get into that.
I thought that's what you meant. That isn't counted as part of that.
Okay.
It's just an offset.
There are other receipts, state-owned timberlands.
Yeah, okay, and I think that's what I thought. Those were what went into the common school fund.
It's controversial right now. Mill City Gates, Chemeketa Community College, the Lynn Benton ESD are suing the Lynn Benton commissioners for not distributing $1.5 million of receipts from state-owned timberlands that were deeded in the 1930s to the state. And they've been distributing the money based on a system set up in the 40s by the legislature for timberlands that were deeded in the 40s. Lynn County then realized that the timberlands deeded in the 30s did not carry a requirement that they share the money, so they have stopped payment. And so those three jurisdictions are suing them, and I guess the county's word back to them is, okay, go ahead and sue us. You do, we're going to ask for all the money back that we've paid you in the past 40 years. So I don't know how much of revenue goes to schools, but it's not distributed through a statewide basis. It would just be those jurisdictions involved. So that's why you wouldn't have a try on that.
I think Terry is doing some work on that, too. Terry Gray in our office.
So yes.
Tie into him on it. But just a quick summary of what we went over yesterday. We said you had a certain appropriation of $418 million. From that, you subtracted out your transportation costs and your basic grants, which are 30% of these of this approved cost figure for each district. And then you make a subtraction for decline and growth grants, and anything left over is equalization. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is how the equalization funds are distributed. I guess I didn't say very much also about the decline and growth. Would you like me to go over that briefly, how the decline and growth grants are?
I'll do that briefly.
Department of Education collects data from the districts on what their number of students are for June 30th and for December 31st. The numbers I've been giving you and talking about yesterday are for this current year, 80-81 year. So a reimbursement of cost for last year. They will give you extra money. They'll give a district extra money for any growth that they've experienced. So we'll look at the June 30th average daily membership, the average number of kids in the district. And they'll look at December 31st figure. And if there's a net gain, say you have 10 additional children in your school district, then multiply that growth times the basic grant per pupil that the district is entitled to.
Senator Monroe.
Why did they use December 31st instead of September?
They're using the December 31st figure of this year. Actually, it's an estimate. They start off with an estimate.
That's recent data they get.
So they're using actual.
So it'd be like last June of 80? That
your June of 80 compared to your December 31 of 80. You come up with a growth. Then they will.
Okay.
They're making estimates on these figures, and to the extent that those estimates are wrong, they make a final adjustment in their final May distribution to the district.
I still don't really understand why they use those figures. It seems like they'd use, you know, December 79 to December 80, or June 79.
They use the start of the year and the end of the year.
Yeah, they'd use.
Senator Drumstead.
But Mr. Chairman, it wouldn't make any difference as long as they make the final distribution on the actual figure.
Well, if they're growing or they're declining, it appears to me that they would grow or decline more over a full year than over only half a year.
But then in May they make a distribution as to what actually happened. Isn't that right, Doctor?
They're using May's where they make all their adjustments.
Right. If adjusted is May.
This is December of the apportionment. The end of a quarter.
Oh.
It's the end of their quarter. So they're saying, trying to use the most recent data they can for any growth that's occurred.
And then those figures are adjusted later when they get the.
Yeah, they have to, yes.
Oh, okay.
So we'll take whatever the growth is and say, and multiply that by the
basic grant
per pupil, and they come up with a total dollar amount, and you give that to the district. Decline works the same way, except that instead of a positive number, you'll have a negative number. If they lost 10 students, they'll take those 10 students, multiply it times the basic grant per student, and then cut it down to 75% to give additional money to the district. I think the rationale for this is that, again, you've got districts that, if they lose students, they aren't always able to cut their costs. In the same proportion, or to account for that decline in students immediately. We're trying to ease the transition.
Senator McFarland.
Still the way it's working.
You didn't mean that they give that. You mean, and I was waiting to hear you tell how they take it from them.
Oh, no, they give extra money if your number of students have gone down. It's still a positive.
You did mean that.
I meant that. That's right. You're probably going to see a bill on this session also to ease out the transitions.
This causes a lump. Actually, I didn't have an example all prepared for you here. You could have the same number of students for 2 or 3 years in a row, you're getting an even amount of basic school support. And then if you experience a decline, June 30th to December 31st, if you experience a decline during the current portion of the year, your appropriation is actually going to go up.
You get extra bulge.
But then the next year, you're drop back, you're going to drop down. The next year is going to be a reimbursement on what on the actual decline. And you're going to see a bill that's going to change its time period over a couple of years to smooth it out. What you'd really like to have is a step function going down like this. That'd be easier for the district. But for now, I'm trying to explain how the formula works. You do get extra money if you've had a decline in students for 1 year. Okay?
Mr. Chairman, may I introduce a couple of members of the Commissionary Chamber of Commerce who are here in the audience to make sure that they're certain.
Who are they? Show them to us.
Marisol Peterson and Terry.
Welcome.
I'm on the brief a little
bit. We are too right now.
You have our sympathy.
Yes.
For those visiting, the reason we're spending the time going over this is not because we think it's fun. It's because with the budget crunch and a change in the allocation of basic school support dollars, it will probably mean we will have to rewrite the law concerning distribution of those dollars to local school districts in order to avoid some distortions. And so we're plugging away trying to get a good grasp of the current system so that we will know, understand the proposed changes when they come before us. Okay.
Now we get into the fun part, in the equalization. Remember, equalization is the money that Oregon is giving to school districts to help out the poorer districts. Oregon schools are heavily dependent on the property tax. Probably half their money is, on average, is coming from the property tax. Those districts without very much property value, they no industrial property or no power plants or something in the backyard, they're usually going to have a higher tax rate. Support a given level of schools. Oregon provides equalization to make it easier for school districts to fund schools.
Well, you all know that.
Some of the audience might not know that. Now, I want to talk about the equalization grant that each district gets. Start, and I'm going to be tossing out some new terms, and I'll explain those as we go along.
Ron, the formula on page 5 of this larger handout, if we followed, would that help if we turn to that page? At the top, talks about equalization.
Yes.
Is.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Pointing out there something. I just had it written in equalization at the front. That's what we're trying to come up with the district's equalization grant.
Why don't you pull that board out a little so maybe the audience can see it some.
Your stuff can still see it, too.
Yeah.
We won't worry about it. Oh, okay. I look at for each district, the Department of Education will make a calculation. They'll look at the approved program. Remember, that's defined by the statute that talks about it. At one time, it was the average of what all the districts are spending. Now, it's that average has been dampened by 9% growth rate. So look at the approved program, subtract out the basic grant. Remember, that's nothing more than 30% of the program. Subtract out any of these other receipts. I just call them other receipts, which are really your federal forest fees and your common school fund monies. Subtract out what your pamphlet calls local required effort. And what that is what the Department of Education has computed as being the amount of money that you could raise depending on according to your property value in the district. Multiply that property value by a given rate, which they determine. They call it the uniform rate.
What is that now? Do you have an idea?
What, this uniform rate? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Let's see. It's 0.00421. It's not really tied into dollars. It could be. I'll get that just in there. It's not exactly a tax rate. So, you got that approved program, the amount that they need to supply the approved program, minus the basic grant, minus the other receipts, and subtract out the local required effort. And if there's a positive amount, if you come up with a positive number, that's the amount of district equalization that they're going to get. If it's a negative number, it turns out this is really huge, then they're not going to get any equalization. It could be zero. Now, I want to explain more about this local required effort. Mm-hmm. And what this is, it's defined as this uniform tax rate that I talked about, which I've also got to define. It's kind of like a tar pit, you know, you take another step, you go in further, and further. You've got a uniform tax rate times the approved program, that's really on a per ADM basis. They're doing it for $100 of approved program times the true cash value of the district. That's that adjusted true cash value I talked about yesterday, adjusted for various types of districts. Take one more step. Well, in a minute, I've got to explain how you get to this uniform tax rate, because that's then it starts getting complicated. Now, I wanted to explain to you a little bit, you know, what this means for districts at different levels. We can algebraically reduce this a little bit. Equalization coming up to the approved program minus the basic grant. That's 100% of the approved program minus 30% of the approved program. You got 70% of the approved program. And for now, I'm going to ignore these other receipts. Let's assume they're equal for all districts. We're zero. Let's ignore it. Get that and subtract out this uniform tax rate times the approved program times 101 times TCV. What I want to show you here is what, in everybody's way, but I want to show you what happens if you have districts that are spending the same amount, they have the same approved program. Remember that chart I showed you yesterday about operating costs for the approved program is really about like so. If you look at anybody along here, they're limited to that $2,085 per student. That's the most the state recognizes as the approved program. If we wanted to compare some of these districts here, we'll say that you're looking at two districts, each have the same approved program. You've got a constant uniform rate for each. You've got an approved program for ADM, which is constant. You've got this, which is a constant. So the only thing that varies the amount of equalization they get is their true cash value. So let's call that constant K times the true cash value. And you'll see here that the larger the true cash value, the smaller this amount's going to be, which means the smaller the equalization. That's precisely what you want. If you've got a rich district with a lot of true cash value, you're not going to give them as much equalization as you would a poorer district. Let's see, we could change this a little bit. I can look at two districts down here on the other side that have the same, what I want to show here, put it to show someone with the same true cash value but different approved programs, altering the variables here a little bit. We've got how do I write that down? So you have 7.7 times your approved program. I'm saying they have the same cash value, but they're spending different amounts of money. So that's going to be a constant, that's going to be a constant, that's going to be a constant. And it's going to have a constant times the issue of program level. Reduce that even more to, take whatever the approved program level is times 0.7 minus a constant. And if they are down here, not up above the maximum, see that the higher the approved program level is, which down here means the higher they're spending, and if they have the same true cash value, the one that's spending more is going to get a larger equalization rate. So the state is really equalizing, providing incentive, providing equalization to help people get up to this approved program level. I don't think we've ever gone over the formulas quite this way, so it's a little different for some of them.
Sometimes I'd like to see it done just with some figures from the district. I'd like, for instance, to see Portland worked out that way, and maybe some district that did get equalization, just to see.
I've got this whole big printout here for every district, so we can do exactly that.
It does it. Goes through the whole formula and just shows.
Just shows you how they. In fact, I can put one up on the board if you want to.
If you don't have time.
Yeah, I'd like to have a couple of examples.
Put Estacada's on it.
Okay.
Equalization?
Yes. Yeah. Pretty integration.
Yeah. Except I'd like to see a non-equalization.
Yeah, I'd like to see Portland too.
By the way, while you're doing that, I wonder, you're talking about being off by two decimal places yesterday.
No,
it because you divided by 0.01 instead of multiplied by 0.01?
I resolved that. I'm all right. Yeah.
Was that the reason?
It's either that or the calculator I was using. Probably the calculator.
Usually as the batteries get a little dull,
that's what happens.
Are you going to be able to do this easily with the data you have there to run through those?
Yes, but I do want to explain one more theoretical thing here to you. We've shown that what happens with these districts is uniform tax rate times a group program. I haven't explained how the uniform tax rates derive. Now that's the key. What this rate is, it's a rate that's determined by the Department of Education. That when applied in this formula, exact gets rid of all the equalization money available. See, like that.
He's right.
I remember that.
What it does.
So they figure out a new rate each time, depending on how much.
How much money you have.
Just put X in there and solve for X.
Depending on how much equalization money you have that you put into the basic school support fund, that's going to change that uniform rate. You put more money in and you drop that rate, drop the uniform rate affects the equalization rate. The lower the rate is, the more districts you're going to have that fall into the equalization category.
It's the same as when you're figuring out how much of each bill to pay each month. You simply total up how much money you have and figure out you're going to pay 85% of each one of them.
That's right.
Do that too?
Yeah. It works 2.5 months.
First thing the Department of Education does, all the races, they go through and they get a feel for how poor or how rich all the districts in the state are. They rank them, they compute a figure called, they call it the relative ability. It's, you think of that as a tax rate.
The state for every district, you get a relative ability, and they look at the approved program, subtract out the basic grant, track out any of those other receipts. They're getting a lot of federal forest fee money. That makes a big difference. They divide that through by
a new term
for you. They call it, the statute calls it supplemental CV. And what that is, put that in parentheses down here, put in brackets. Supplemental TCV is going to be the...
Sounds like a pesticide.
They'll look at the approved program for students. Again, times 0.01 times true cash values. They're trying to weight the true cash value by the approved program level. Now, it's pretty hard to just intuitively get a feel for what this formula is doing to you. Hard for me anyway. Sat down and fool with it. And well, they're weighting the TCV, they're dividing through the amount of money that's needed to supply the approved program, dividing that through by their ability, this is supposed to be their ability to support the approved program, and coming up with the tax rate. Well, rank every district. We have all the districts out here in this graph. From poorest to richest, you go up here to voting rate, you're just going to have them all, and it's just a nice straight function. Here's your district number one, turns out to be real poor, and district number 312
this whole thing will reduce to a simpler way to look at it. Now, I'll go through it if you want me to, but it comes out to be 70 times the number of students divided by the true cash value adjusted. I got to qualify that. If we ignored these other receipts, and I wanted to do that, just this has a strange effect, you know, it really affects the mix of districts. Some get a lot of money, others don't. But conceptually, I want to try and figure out what happens if these are zero or if they're all the same, if you aren't worried about other receipts. And if you ignore that, you come down to the relative ability of the districts being dependent on their true cash value and the number of students, which that makes sense intuitively. You look at the property value per student, and you'd say, gee, if you have a small property value per student, you're going to have a small property value for a poor district. You're going to get more equalization. Okay, so the Department of Education does this formula for every district, comes up with their relative ability, and then while they're in the computer, they start an accumulation process. This isn't anything I commit to memory. I just want to go through it once more and see just step by step what they do. They'll look at the computer, a new figure, cumulative relative ability. They'll look at starting with the poorest district, and they'll take the cumulative approved program, subtract out the cumulative basic grant, subtract out the cumulative other receipts, subtract out the total amount of money available for equalization. That's $119 million. And divide that by the cumulative supplemental TCP. You do that for every district. Now, the first district is real poor. You've only got one district's worth of approved program, one district's basic grant, the same district's other receipts. You're subtracting out a huge dollar amount, and you've got
give you a quick graph what it looks like.
This is the rate. Charles, I've rolled through this. These are districts from poorest to richest. It comes as you accumulate it, you come up with a curve or graph that looks about like that. Where it peaks, the rate at which this graph peaks, about in this here, be 0.00. That's the uniform rate. That's what's leading through all this. That you see them.
And then when
the uniform rate is explainable. That uniform rate is the rate at which, if you
apply to all districts,
apply to all districts, you get rid of your $119 million.
You run out of money.
All these districts, from this poor one down to number one up to maybe district 200, all those districts are equalization districts. They get something. Some of them may not get very much. You have some that get a lot of equalization, some that only get, $20. They're all equalization districts.
And that block shrinks then when the amount of money for basic is decreased.
That's right. Or if you increase it. If you increase it, you start down lower in the curve. You come up with something else. Well, you come back down around like so. You're moving the curve that way, and you're going to come up with even more equalization. And you lower the uniform rate. Now, what's going to happen if with the proposed appropriation levels, you're moving the curve this way, you'll be driving up the uniform rate.
Yes.
You're reducing the number of equalizations.
Senator Earl.
Fewer districts, if we have to reduce the amount that goes to equalization, fewer districts will get equalization, you'll get a less revenue.
Yes.
This is probably a stupid question. When you're talking about the true cash value, you're talking about ADM, not the actual value of the district, but the value per student of the district, aren't you?
Well, yeah, you are.
If there's two districts, each worth $3 million, one's got 300 students, the other's got 100, that should affect
it. Yeah, you're right. It's the true cash value per student.
Okay.
That was that. Yeah.
has that 70 TC, 80 M over TCV that I have. Those are the two variables that, that really determine how bad off the district is.
Well, that's it. I mean, you're, you know,
Mr. Chairman, at what stage do they do this computing and make these decisions? Is that done?
Well, they're, every time they're going to make a distribution, every time they're going to make a run as to what districts can expect for the next year or
is there a mandatory time when they must make a distribution? Or is it dependent
on right now they've just done one because they've got to get the information out to the districts for, by first Monday in March. And the law says that if the legislature hasn't made a decision as to how much money they're going to get, they've got to use the dollar appropriation from the preceding year and see what would happen using updated data. So if there has been no growth in the basic school support appropriation, that means you've upped, you know, you're using higher costs, higher basic grants, less equalization. You're upping this rate.